Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, indeed, this is the Boomer and the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring you good information and conversation. And right now we're in the process of waiting for our guest to come on board, looking for his call to be coming into the studio. Is Alan UK. But before we do that, we're going to get started with a few other things. And we want to remind everybody that this is Tuesday, April 17th, 2012. And we are broadcasting from our studios in the Feeding Arizona Complex in Youngtown, Arizona, which is also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. And if you're interested in making a donation to a 501c3 corporation, a little tax relief, seeing as how this is tax time, contact Jesse Ramirez at valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. That's valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. It is a 501c3, as I mentioned, and you can be helping a great cause as well. Whether you're being a volunteer, whether you're donating cash or donating food, all donations are gratefully accepted, and no donation is too small. And I'm Pete Peters, and I want to remind our listeners of the Boomer the Babe Incorporated.
Please continue to hold for just a moment longer. We will be on the line shortly to...
Hello? And we're going to be getting to our guest in just a short minute here. I think he's online right now, but I want to remind everybody that the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is involved in much more than just this radio program. We also publish many books and e-books, and our book authors have their own shows on the Boomer and the Babe Network here on Blog Talk, and we invite you to listen to them as well. You can contact us through our website, which is boomerandthebabe.com, and while you're there, please sign up for our free online magazine, Boomer Experience Speaks. Our Experience Speaks magazine comes out monthly. It's absolutely free. Sign up for it and receive it in your inbox every month, and we're in the process of putting our next month's issue out right now. A few more things to do with it, and it'll be ready to go, and we invite you to do... get involved in all those various activities, Boomer the Babe Incorporated, and also Valley View Community Food Bank. Well, on the line right now I have today's guest. He is Alan UK. Alan has written a book entitled Buying America Back. It's the real deal blueprint for restoring American prosperity. We hear in the news about balance of trade, and we hear things about globalization and all these reasons why the American dollar is going overseas, and all the various political reasons and aspects. But my indication is that this is a bipartisan solution to these problems. So we're going to get into that right now with Mr. Alan UK. Alan, welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show. Glad you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure, believe me. We'd like to start the show, if it's okay with you, that you give us a little, what we call our, if Deborah were here, she's not here with me today, your little two-minute movie, a little bit about Alan UK before the book of Buying America Back. I read in your bio that you're in San Diego, and you've done a lot of interesting things in San Diego, starting in your dorm room at UC San Diego. Why don't you tell us about some of that?
Well, I was 18, and I was an engineering student at UCSD, and I started my business, and I've had it. I'm not that old, but I'll be 60 this year. So I've had one job my whole life. And so, in fact, right now I'm preparing my kids to take over the business. The three of them are graduating college now, and the other one's finishing. And so I'm going through the Boomer and, you know, and the whole thing myself. So anyway, what I've done over the years, just to give you a perspective, is that since I've had this manufacturing company for so long, and we export to 60 countries, so the business has over the years grown, is I run charities and I've done some political things. And so I am an old guard guy back from probably your parents' age, or I think that the business owners should be doing things in the community like starting museums or getting bills passed and things like that, because I think that the business community used to be more active than they have been lately. And so I'm trying to throw back. You know, I started one of the museums in town. You know, I've gotten some legislation passed over the years, and I've got another one I want to get done. So I'm your old-style active, you know, community businessman. And so that's kind of like it gets me. My kids are, you know, growing now, so, you know, I have time to work on these things.
It's interesting. You and I are pretty close in age. I'm a little older than you are. Matter of fact, I'm old enough to start getting my Medicare this year. So this month. So I'm a little bit older. But I know from whence you speak, because there certainly is a time in your life when you can start to dedicate what you do and some of your activities and energies towards something a little bit more than raising families and running a business. And it's almost a luxury to have that time now, isn't it?
Well, also the thing is that, frankly, you know, our people at our age, they have the resources too. They know how to do things. Their friends, you know, also a lot of them are, you know, can do things. And you suddenly have the not only time, but you have the knowledge resources to affect things you couldn't do when you were young. And also you start worrying about the big picture, about what's going to happen with our grandkids and kids, you know, as far as how the economy's doing and what's going to happen next. And that's why I wrote this book, and I'm starting this, basically this cause, where I'm trying to change the consumer spending in the countries to be focused on doing things to help our long-term future and the job situation, which we can entirely control with our spending. And now that I have the resources to do this kind of stuff, I actually am happy that I can, you know, step up and try to affect the situation. Now, just so you know, I'm back before we start this whole thing. Years ago, I invented the smog index you see on cars, new cars, and I got the labels passed so that into law. So 20 years ago, I did something like this where I got a national label put on things. And what I'm trying to do right now is I'm trying to change the labels on all products where the country of origin, instead of saying just made in America or China or whatever, would be a list of the countries that made their percentages plus our trade ratio, which is vital, and the nationality of the manufacturer. So when you buy a product, it's like food now. You look at it, it tells you how many calories it's got and how much fat and carbohydrates. So when you buy something, you're a lot better informed about, you know, what it's going to do to your body. Well, when you buy things right now, your money's basically staying in the country, or it's going to places all over the world, and you're affecting your own future. And this, when you make a decision about what you're going to buy, you have a right, I think, to know where the money's going. And that's what I'm trying to do with this label for products. And I've been... having been, you know, to the rodeo before, I now have kind of the know how it's done. So there's a bill being prepared in Congress. I have support for this and endorsements from everybody from the last Secretary of Commerce to Ralph Nader. So and by the way, the unions have endorsed this and a bunch of other groups, the National Association of Manufacturers, last president. And so this is something that's going to be coming up. And that right now we're trying to craft all the problems of the bill, because what should it include and whether drugs should be in there, because I think a lot of people would like to know if their drugs are made in the States or they're made in India or China, because there's a safety issue sometimes. And so we're trying to, like, put all those kind of details together right now in writing this legislation. And so that's kind of what my life's been. When I wrote this book, which that is the first thing of its kind ever written, where it not only talks about the issue of what we buy and how it affects the world, ourselves, is, but also it has all this information that's never been published before about exactly what our trade ratios with countries are, how many tourists go there, and you know, how much what they buy from who. So you, after reading this, you're a lot better world citizen, you understand what's going on, because we're only 5% of the world's population. There's 95% that's not us, and this gives you a whole new perspective about where we sit in the scheme of things. And
well,
so
think,
that's what I'm up to.
It sounds wonderful to me, I don't fully understand it, but I am somewhat of a news and political junkie. So I watch, Deborah and I both watch a lot of this cable news stuff that after a while it just gets to be a bunch of blather, you know how that goes. But there's every now and then there's an interesting topic that comes up that you try to listen to. And when they start talking about things like balance of trade and trade deficits and all these kinds of things, it gets kind of foggy with me. I mean, I think I basically understand it. You know, we got more money going out than coming in type of thing, and however that works out. But let's, if we can, for the purpose of this discussion and for my lack of knowledge, maybe you can explain something to me here. And that is, let's use the automobile as an example. And I don't know
right.
if that's a good example.
It's a perfect example. Perfect example.
But there's all these plants down in the south in Kentucky or wherever they are, and they're making Toyotas and whatever else they're making, Jaguars, who knows whatever else. And there's reasons for them going to the south, and it has to do with unions and so on and so forth. That aside, that out of the discussion, if somebody spends $30,000 on an automobile that's made in that factory in Tennessee, how much of that money actually goes to the parent company, which is in Japan, as an example? How does that all break out?
Okay, well, let me tell you something also. Okay, in the big picture, and I like telling about big picture, and I'll give you, then that makes you get the perspective how the small picture, you know, sits.
That's fine.
Okay,
sure.
The U.S. economy, we import about $2 trillion a year. And we export about $1.3 trillion a year, so there's a $700 billion trade deficit. And that money is also like jobs and things. That's what it really means. And we're kind of bleeding. We're lying there on the pavement bleeding. Okay. And what's happened is this has been going on for a long time. And so, you know, basically the blood's leaving our body, and that's why the country's now having these problems where we have these trade deficits, we have budget deficits, people can't find jobs. And it's actually the summation of all this trade deficit we've had all these years. Now, and really we're not going to get better until the trade deficit solves itself, and that's a combination of us exporting more, and which means we shift our purchases to countries that buy from us also, or we take things that we were buying from foreign countries that have bad ratios with us and make it domestically. Now, the reason why I need a book with all this stuff in there is because it turns out country by country it's very different. Japan's got a trade ratio of just over 50% with us. So what happens is for every dollar we buy from Japan, you know, they buy 50 cents from us. England's almost exactly 1-to-1, and so is Canada. So it actually turns out if you buy something made in Canada or a Canadian company or buy it in the U.S., it really doesn't change our job situation because they're buying from us about what we're buying from them. So they're creating a lot of jobs here in the export market, and the money's bouncing off, okay? And England's the same way. England has a 1 ratio. So it actually doesn't hurt anything buying an English car because the money going to English company, you know, they use it to buy American goods. And there's really no difference. Japan's about 50%. So actually it depends on what country is putting the factory in here. Now, you're always better off having a part made or at least part of it made in the United States. So these things being made in the South, at least there's, you know, 50% content or whatever that is U.S. made. So half that money, even if the country's getting the other 50%. And so and if it's the case of it's England, that money's all going to bounce back. In the case it's Japan, you know, about 50% is going to bounce back. So what our total debt that we're creating overseas is the summation of all these percentages. And so it's not a simple thing. That's why I created a book with tables, and I want to have it on the labels. So you actually see it's like calories. You can't say it's got a lot of calories. We want to know if it's got 300 or it's got 500 calories. Because ultimately it adds up to how much weight you gain. In this case, it adds up to, you know, how big our trade deficit is. So to answer the question more fully, you know, yes, it's good to be making the plants here compared to buying things that are made overseas if it's from a country that has a bad deficit with us. And so it all depends. And that's the problem. Americans had no way of knowing what's what until these labels were created, and I'm, you know, creating this information. So now, for the first time, people can know how many calories things have, or in this case, you know, what the trade ratios are with those countries, so they can figure out what's better than something else for the U.S. economy.
What do you think the chances are of getting this this bill, law, whatever, passed, given the state of the political arena today? I mean, who is proposing it, and who's likely to oppose it?
Well, I think the from what I'm hearing from the pundits, you know, they think it'll pass. Period. I think it's just a matter of how long it's going to take. Because what will happen is these retailers that import a lot, or these companies are basically their businesses importing in the United States, all the stuff made like in bad countries for our trade ratio, like China, are going to use their, you know, political influence and contributions to slow this down and prevent it. The people that are going to be for it are basically the American consumers, because they're worried about their jobs, particularly women, because they're worried about their kids and grandkids, and the U.S. manufacturers, and the a lot of people that are groups like the unions, AFL-CIO endorse this. So it'll be the American workers, the American businesses, versus the importers and the retail chains, which are mainly selling imported goods. And so that'll be the battleground. But, you know, generally when you have this kind of thing with food, for example, the manufacturing companies of food didn't want to put those labels on, and they fought it every bit of the way. And so there was 85% of the U.S. Population that did polls wanted this food information. It took them 5 years, because what would happen is that every time, you know, the do-gooders would go in and tell people why we need this, and the congressman convinced, you'd have the food manufacturer lobbyists showing up, you know, half an hour later saying, we gave you $10,000, you know. So it took 5 years of this back-and-forth battle. But ultimately, people will do what the customers, what the consumers want, because they're the voters and other people elect you. And it'll just be a matter of how fast it takes us to push this through against their legislative games they're going to play, because the vast majority of Americans want this. So that's and by it's bipartisan. It won't be a partisan thing. It'll be basically more a lobbyist making contributions to do slowing down movements, you know, in committees and things like that. And that's why I need a populist movement, whereby when that starts happening, I can activate people in that person's district to go write or call their congressman saying, hey, you know, yeah, you took $20,000 from Walmart or whatever, but I don't care. I want this label, you know.
Sure.
And
sure.
And or we're not reelecting you. You know, and it's ultimately going to come down to that, and that's how these things are pushed through. Basically, sad to say, it's not. You know,
How much of that was involved in your smog index?
Well, it was a bit of that. Ironically, you're probably gonna laugh at this, but my big opponent was the Auto Club, because they don't want you to resist driving, and a lot of the things that, you know, like motorhomes have bad pollution, and so their problem was that this is going to discourage people from, you know, pleasure driving and driving big things like motorhomes, and so it actually kind of hurt their business, they felt. In fact, I went and talked to the president of the Southern California one, and I said, well, you know, this is, you know, like, what about gas mileage indexes? And he literally told me, we would take gas mileage indexes off of cars if we could.
Wow.
So it becomes, you know, and that's the Auto Club. I think they're like, you know, I have a triple A card, you know, I think the greatest. But what happens is when you're threatening a bureaucracy where they think their you know, their businesses are gonna suffer from their income, they all act like this. And so, not picking on them, because I don't think that's their mission, it's just that they're worried about their you know, how much services they're going to sell. And so you see this, you know, no one voluntarily is going to have a decrease in their business. No matter who they are. So you really have to push it. And so there's going to be all these retailers that basically live on the giant margins they're getting from importing things, and they're going to have to retrim their businesses. Well, there's going to be two things happening. What I really want them to do is not decrease their sales. What I really want them to do is to offer American content as an option. So you pay this much for the fully imported item and this one for something that's all made or partly made in the United States. And I feel, you know, there's been focus groups that show that you'll pay up to 20% more for an American-made product. And so it's going to be like organic food, where people will pay more for organic food, you know, some people just buy the regular food. Well, I want to have that situation where it's available, where you can buy the American-made one or the one that's got a lot of American content, you know, or the other one. You have both. And so the retailers aren't going to necessarily suffer a loss of profits. It's just they're going to have to carry something extra that they're going to end up selling for more because, you know, people want it. And I think in this case, that's how that will play out.
So and, no matter what happens, I mean, it always seems to come back to the adage of whether or not they want it is follow the money trail. If they're convinced in their own mind that it's going to cost them money, I don't think there's anything that can be. I'm just making this stupid statement. There's probably nothing much that can be done. If they're so convinced in their mind, they're going to fight this thing tooth and nail, aren't they?
Yeah, but you got to remember that I think we're going to end up with by the time we're through, I think most Americans would agree that they have a right to know where their money's going when they buy something.
Absolutely.
It's very easy for the manufacturers to put that on. I'm a manufacturer because we write checks for everything we buy, and we know what it costs because we know if we're making money or not when we sell it. So we have that information. And a lot of people are going to resist publishing it. They're going to make all kinds of claims why it's not, you know, possible like the food companies did. But, you know, at the end of the day, they put the information on. And the reason you found out why they didn't want to tell you is because there's some things that, you know, that would hurt them. In fact, they had to reformulate a lot of foods. In fact, even the fast food restaurants now are changing the menus because now you tell them that, you know, this thing has got, you know, 1,000 or 1,500 calories, you know. You're not going to want to buy it anymore, so now they have to. And it's a good thing. This is how America works. This is why America works. And I think what's happened with the situation we're in right now is that you know, we haven't been doing what we do well, which is to give a lot of information to consumers because people are smart, you know. And if you give them enough information, you know, they'll figure things out for themselves of what they need to do. And usually, when we have these problems, is when you don't. It's kept secret. You don't know how many calories it has, or you don't know that this thing's, you know, really hurting the economy when you buy this one versus the other, you know. And that's what I want to do is have this transparency. And I don't think we need to regulate everything. I think it's people let people know you can make a lot of things that change. And one other thing this is hugely important for you listeners. The U.S. economy is $15 trillion. $10 trillion, which is two-thirds of that, is consumer spending. And so you only a 1% shift in consumer spending is $100 billion, and that's 1.3 million jobs. And so if you have a 5% shift in consumer spending, that's 7 million jobs, and basically our unemployment goes back to traditional level. So it doesn't take a giant change. It just takes like 5% shift in not like giving the money up, we're just going to buy this instead of that, you know, for the job situation to get straightened out. So it's not a real hard thing to do. It's just that you have to have how to make that choice. And so this is all very possible, and that's why, you know, I've been getting so much support from all kinds of different people because they realize this is really the crux of the problem, and it's actually not that hard to fix. And probably a lot of compliance will happen by people just when they find out the information, they'll just buy differently. So it might largely solve itself without any further actions, you know, on the part of consumer products.
I can't. It's just, Alan, I think it's just the cynic in me. But I think what you're doing is fantastic. I mean, I'm a member of a group here in Arizona that's Local First Arizona, and it has to do with buying habits and buying from local businesses. Now, those local businesses might sell products that you're talking about, you're talking about letting people know what's in them. And they may be buying some of those products at these local businesses, but this group is trying to get them to buy from a local business person because it keeps, for the same reasons that you were saying about the food products or the other products that are made elsewhere.
It keeps the money local.
It keeps the money local. And in the event of the buy local, as an example, there's $27 out of 100 leaves the economy in a locally owned business, and $73 stay here. $57 of 100 leaves the economy when you're buying something that's not locally owned. And it's I imagine that just it's the same type of thing that you're talking about.
At a bigger scale.
On a much larger scale, exactly, exactly.
Well, except what the difference is that numbers don't show you how much of that actually comes back indirectly. Because, for example, when you have you send money to some places like, say, England or whatever, you think, well, the money's gone. Well, actually, the English have a trade ratio about one. They have a lot of tourists that come back to the United States. So, ironically, whether you know it or not, some of that money is coming back because not only are they buying American products, which helps our manufacturers, but actually, you know, tourists are coming here from England, you know, and so it's subtle, but we're a little better off than that. But countries like China, for example, are the bad ones because it's a 25% ratio, and which is very bad, and there's no Chinese tourists coming here because the government, you know, is largely controlled over there. So there's a big difference of exactly who it is, and as an example, it's 25% with China. You know, that's what they buy from us. So 75% is gone. South Korea's 79% ratio, which means that 79 cents comes back and 21 cents is gone. And Taiwan's 73% comes back. You know, so it's only 27. So there's a giant difference between buying Chinese, which is you get 25 cents back, versus 72 cents from Taiwan or 79 cents from South Korea. And so you can actually help the economy not by buying something American, but just like by buying a Korean or Taiwanese television instead of a Chinese television, 50% more of that money is going to come back to the United States because they buy a lot from us versus China, which tries not to buy anything from us. In fact, their biggest imports are scrap paper and metal. And so you can, you know, just by which imports you country you import from. And by the way, some of these countries are low-cost country, so it's not like you have to suddenly pay more for that stuff. You know, some of it's, you know, their costs are no higher than China. But they're a country that buys a lot of American products, so we're picking up jobs and getting money in the country by their buying our stuff. And so that's what's a bigger picture is what I'm trying to tell you. Is you have to know the percentages. It's like the calories. You got to know how many calories it has. You know, not a lot or little or none, you know, or whatever. And that's what I'm trying to do is when you start seeing the numbers – then suddenly it all becomes you have control. You know, you can decide.
Sure. Let's go back to that automobile just for a quick second.
Yeah.
And let's use an American manufacturer this time.
Right. Ford.
And let's say, exactly. I was going to say let's use Ford Motor Company.
Yeah.
Ford Motor Company has plants in Canada. They have plants. They have plants in Mexico.
Right.
And they have plants in other places around the world too.
Well, they do. All the large companies now.
Yes, exactly. And they go and they have those plants over there because it's cheaper labor is what the statement is.
Well, actually, they have the plants over there because they sell the cars domestically to those countries.
Okay.
They're not – Ford's not taking cars generally and shipping in the United States. What's happening is they have plants in Brazil, for example, or whatever, and, you know, because they're selling them to the Brazilians. And because they have the same. By the way, we are the least home team oriented country of the industrial countries. All these other countries, the buyers, you know, really have to pay a lot more or have a product that's really better for them not to buy their own stuff. And so, if you go to like France, you know, there's on the, you go to the stores, grocery stores, there's little French flags on the products made in France. And 9 out of every 10 of the top 10 French models sold there are French. And they have Germany next door, and even the French admit the cars aren't that good, but 9 out of the top 10 selling cars are French. And so it's very hard to move them to not buy something French. The same true for Japan, like 95 or 98% of the cars sold in Japan are Japanese. In Korea, it's like 99%. You know, and you go around these countries, and Germany, I think the top 20 models, every single one made in Germany. All these countries buy their own stuff, except us. And we're too generous, is really what it is. You know, we're trying to help these countries, and so we didn't, you know. And years ago, that was the right thing to do because we were doing so well and everyone was doing so poorly. We're trying to help them out, you know. But it's not true anymore. We're not in that kind of position, and they're doing better. You know, so it's time for us to kind of, like, you know, look after our own interests, you know, like they're doing.
Charity starts at home.
Right. And but that, my point in Canada, it doesn't hurt us buying a Ford made in Canada
right.
because they have a trade ratio of one.
Let's talk about France again
right.
just, by way of example.
Right.
They've got Germany right next to them, who is basically known to have high-end products, particularly in automobiles, when you start thinking about what they produce and so on and so forth. Now, the price of a corresponding vehicle in France that as to one that's in Germany as far as class of car is concerned, when you take that German car across the border, are the prices inflated? So that people
Euros. They have euros. No, it's just that the French, first of all, just, you know, that's probably the worst example because the French still don't like the Germans. And actually, the one out of the 10 cars they buy that isn't, you know, made in France is made in Italy. And so it's very hard for the Germans to sell anything to the French. By the way, I should throw some numbers out while we're talking, which is in the book. You know, that's, the trade ratio with France is 70%. With Germany, it's 58%. Actually, Germany does not – well, they're such a big exporter of machinery and goods and all that. The ratio is going to be low. But, I mean, but back to Germany, for example, it's you know, 58% of that, you know, is bouncing back. In the case of France, it's 70%. So that's why you have to know this stuff, because see, it's all over the place. You'd never guess, you know, some of these numbers, you know, that what the percentages are that they buy from us. And they just, this is what they want to do. The Frenchman is very proud of France. They want to drive a French car. You know, and it used to be that way here, how people felt about American cars. You know, they wanted to drive
right.
American. I remember my dad,
right.
you know, I had to put a gun to his head, you know, to have him get my car after I bought a BMW years ago. And, you know, he was not going to sit in a foreign car, you know. So,
well, my dad was the same way with Ford Motor. He was a Ford Motor retiree. And, you know, he says, why wouldn't I buy a Ford? That's where I work. And when he worked years prior to that, when he worked at Packard Motor Company, I said, why wouldn't I buy a Packard?
Those were wonderful cars. Oh, it's too bad that car, the company's out of business.
Yeah, it really is. But nonetheless, in the event of a car, let's kind of stay with that, although maybe I shouldn't have thrown things back at you. But an American-made, quote, American-made car, a car that's assembled here in the United States, a Ford product, the parts might be, various component parts might be assembled in Mexico and shipped to that factory, correct?
Yes, but in general, this is where we need the labels. In fact, even the car labels
right.
got to get updated, is that the Japanese companies like Toyota, the majority of cost is for a car is not the final assembly. It's all these components that come in.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the cost for a Toyota, even if it's made here, is all these imported parts that came from Japanese suppliers. And then the majority of an American car is actually domestic producers. And so even though at assembly, you know, the work is done here, the American companies have a higher percentage of content, even if it shows it on the label or not, because they're buying from suppliers. And by the way, a problem right now with the label system, which is what I want to change with this, and listen closely, is that the rules are very hard to beat and, you know, are easy to beat, and that they're being played with all the time. So what happens is that it says 75% content or the last place it was significantly transformed. So you can take a bunch of parts from a foreign country, like I imported, let's say, a bunch of parts from China, and I assemble it together here, I can claim it's American-made because the last transformation was here. And what happens with these Toyotas, which you think they've claimed to have 85% U.S. content, is a lot of these Japanese suppliers, knowing that Toyota wants to show a high number so people feel better about buying a Toyota, is they ship their sub-assemblies here, they put it together here, then ship it to the Toyota plant. Now Toyota can claim that those parts that went into the car are 100% American-made. And that's one of the things that raises their number. And in truth, if you actually did it by cost, not the fact that they did something to it and reshipped it, it's actually much lower. And that's why car companies, U.S. car companies, are very interested in this bill, because it would actually kind of like tell you the truth of the, actually when you have to go by cost, you know exactly what the ratios are, because the, you know, the their numbers are better compared to a lot of these cars that are assembled here. They claim high numbers because they're playing this game of shipping things to a third point, doing something to them, and then reshipping them, claiming their U.S. content.
Does this, does the American car industry participate in any of that themselves? And by supporting your, by supporting this bill, are they indeed having their own ox gored a little bit here?
No. In fact, I could. I had one guy I met, which was the used to be ex head of the Jeep division of Chrysler, and they were livid about this game. they were really buying American components. These other components are claiming American. We're just shipped to somewhere here and you know, converted somehow and then reshipped, and that they were claiming they were more American than their stuff when the opposite was true. And so because when you see the truth, you know, the American cars. Also, by the way, the nationality of manufacturer is important, because you know where the profits are going and where the management salaries are paid and where basically the engineering's money is going. And the American stuff is basically designed in the United States, and so all those costs are incurred here, and the profits stay here. On a foreign company, basically, the profits are going over there, and usually the management salaries and most of the time the engineering. And so it beyond the direct cost of manufacture, there's other costs. That's why you want to know in that bill that I want to put through that the nationality of the manufacturers, because that's also an additional factor beside the percentages. You know, you want a U.S.-based company. In fact, even if it's entirely imported, if it's a U.S. company doing it, there's going to be some of that money that's going to, where the profits are coming here, and probably the management salaries and the engineering design marketing are probably going to be expenses that are occurring here, which get to stay in the U.S.
Right. Well,
it's complicated, I know.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, in many respects, the intricacies and the percentages and a little bit here and a little bit there, what it all adds up to in the finite end is probably complicated and takes a lot of research, and you seem to be able to do it, so that's really phenomenal.
Well, fortunately, I'm a manufacturer, so I know all this stuff, because we make things, we know, and we sell to 60 countries, and we import some parts, frankly, which you would never know, because it's converted here in the U.S., so we can rightly claim that ours is made in USA, but it'll play against me when this comes out, because you're going to find out, like, you know, there's a whole bunch of parts, not a large percentage, but there's a percentage of my stuff that in my American trade products that are actually imported, some of them from China. You know, but I don't want to reveal that unless my competitors do, because I don't want to suddenly have the disadvantage, you know. And so what I would do is, if we're going to do it, we're all going to do it, you know, so you can
sure.
see what the relative numbers
sure.
are.
Well, it's certainly in the news, and anybody that doesn't know that we've got an election coming up here in the next few months, they've got their head in the sand about that. So if they're going to have their head in the sand about this, definitely speaking, I would think. But how do you feel that the election is going to affect this in any way, shape, or form? Do you think it makes a difference? And why should a voter be interested in the book and having this knowledge?
Well, first of all, the election. How it is affecting us is that Congress is elected in 2-year terms, and so what happens is that when you start a bill in Congress at the end of that 2-year cycle, when the reelection is, all the bills die. You have to reintroduce them. What's happening is, because Congress is not trying to get much done right now because they're all fighting, getting something passed this year is very difficult. So what these congressmen that are helping with this bill, what they want to do is get the bill written, you know, get all the support put up and put it in the first of next year, because then it's another 2-year cycle and the election for the president's over, so they're not posturing. And so it is affecting me in that, had there not been a presidential election going on where everyone's, you know, posturing, we probably could have gotten this through this year instead of next year. You know, so to answer your question, yeah, it does. You know, slowing things down it also hurts getting things done. And the second thing, I'm trying to remember, you were asking me about besides the presidential election. It was, what was the other question? I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just, I think it had more to do with because there is an election. Is it going to be the case where, and I think you basically answered the question, was the fact that it's slowed down. Now, the next thing that was coming to my mind as far as asking you is this going to be one of those bills or laws that's going to have all kinds of things attached to it, and because of the attachments, this won't pass? Or is this going to be an attachment to something else?
Well, I can't control that, but the point is that I think this is where the grassroots part, you know, where they complain if there's something going on, because a lot of weird things go on in the secret committees of Congress. But I think the overall good to the economy is that, you know, this has to get done. I don't know, what they can throw to it to hurt it. That's the kind of things you get with these secret, you know, contributions and all that going on. But they can, if there's enough voters, they can actually, or votes in Congress, they can actually strip all that stuff. And one of the things I'm going to be doing is I have a grassroots thing, and I have a website, and I'm trying to put together, is we're going to be watching them. And, you know, we can go after the person that put that extra amendment in, you know, to go to his district, because it affects every district in the United States and every state. You know, their people in those states are getting paid less or having less chances of getting jobs because of the situation. So what we would tell people is that, you know, the guy who did this would go to his voters in that state and say, you know, your congressman, you know, or senator just did this, which is hurting you, you know, so he can get a contribution from so-and-so, you know. And so suddenly we can, with this thing, go after those guys, because it isn't a problem of just one state or another. This hurts everyone. And those things actually, you know, have a much better chance of getting through like this, because they can't escape the consequences.
Right.
And believe me, we will. I've been through this before. You know,
yeah,
it's a game. You know, we have our forces, you know, and they have their forces, you know, but our forces, you know, are going to make a point. For example, Ralph Nader likes this a lot, you know, and that, you know, Ralph Nader would have fun with that, you know, saying so-and-so today, and he's like that, and there are some activists, and if someone does that kind of stuff, you'll hear about it, and the people's own state will hear about it, you know, so we're not going to let it go like that, you know, without a fight, certainly.
Well, here's my concern, and I'm glad you've got support for this thing from people who also have names that are recognizable. And I'm looking at this little thing here this note that was sent to me, that Richard Trumka, president of
AFL-CIO, endorsed this.
Now, he endorsed it, and he's pretty well established as being as a left wing endorser, a progressive as he calls himself, a Democrat. And then on the second one down on the list here is Brian Bilbrey, of Republican from your district there in San
Diego. He's my congressman.
Right. Yeah. And I remember Bilbrey when he was active years ago, when I used to live in San Diego, you know, 10, 12 years ago, and he was running and active in local politics. I think he was on the Board of Commissions or something like that.
He was on the County Board of Supervisors before he got elected to Congress.
Exactly. And he's a Republican. So, I mean, right there you got somebody on both sides of the fence.
Well, more than that, actually, if you go further down the list, Duncan Hunter, who used to be chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, who's an arch, you know, conservative, endorsed this, you know. So there's, you know, it's cutting across. I mean, everyone agrees that we have a right to know where the money's going. I mean, so
right.
That's not, and you only have to be a voter to like, you know, because we're all affected, whether we vote or this or that, you know, like, where's the money going? Why are we having a hard time getting jobs? Why aren't middle-class people's incomes going up like they used to? And it turns out it's this stuff, and once you, and people want to get a handle on it. So it's like the calories on food. You don't have to be Republican or Democrat or even be an adult to care about you're going to get fat if you keep eating this stuff. You know, now you know how many calories it has. It's the same thing here, where I think it transcends all that. You know, the only people who don't want this are people either making so much money that it overcomes their desire to help the United States, or foreign interests. There's a lot of those, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, they're worried about their stuff, not ours, you know.
I don't mean to be beating this horse. I mean, but it just seems to me, and again, I have to clarify this by saying this is the cynic in me. It just seems to me that the people that are making the money over this thing have their hands in people's pockets, and they're giving donations, and they're doing this and doing that to lack of a better word, to buy a vote or buy support. all the lobbying efforts and so on and so forth that are going on. And I just see this as being so restricting. And in Congress, as a general rule, I don't see how these special interests will ever stop doing this. And I don't think that the Congress has the gumption to make a change. Although it's good, it's right, and it should be done, I don't think they ever believe in or listen to anything anybody tells them anyhow, unless it's coming through their pocketbook.
Okay, well, three things. Okay, first of all, they did with food. You know, the food industry lobbied as hard as they could against that information, you know, and the voters, basically, there wasn't actually a big business constituency for putting that on there. It was actually just the general public, you know. And ultimately, you pick up a product now or go to a restaurant, it tells you how many calories it's got and all that other information. So they did win, and that wasn't even battling in business interest and the consumers. It was just consumer interest versus business interest. My thing's a little different. We have consumer interest and the U.S. manufacturers and farmers and ranchers and mining companies and all that have a stake in this. So it's a large block of businesses, you know, and the American consumer versus the foreign, you know, interest businesses. And so we actually are in better shape than the food labels were. Remember, I did put smog indexes on cars, so I've been through this before. And so the thing is, I know what I'm up against, and that's why I'm creating these giant coalitions, you know, because I know there's no big battle. I want my army to be bigger than their army. And so I'm not – but one of the things that really, at the end of the day, you know, makes this is that when you really become politically active, like the food thing, it really got back to that situation I'm telling you about. This affects everybody in every district, is that even this chairman of this committee tries to put some poison pill in there. He's elected by voters. Those voters are getting fat or having heart attacks or in his district, you know, and they heard from him because these groups got very active, you know, that call, that, you know, let him know that, you know, you're not bearing that thing. I don't want to die of a heart attack so you can get reelected. You know,
and
that same thing happens here where everyone's job is at risk, you know, everyone's Social Security checks at risk, you know, and you're going to recall this guy or you're going to not reelect this guy or you're not going to give money to this guy, you know, and you're going to run another candidate against this guy who's taking a contribution that's destroying the voters' own future. And this is that kind of case. So those things, you know, they happen. You know, and so, and that's what a lot of the pundits in Washington they saw. What they're not ideological; they just see how forces play out, and they just see this one as one that's it can be slowed down, but it'll eventually you'll see these 5 years from now on all products. But they also know it's going to be this battle. You know, so just get ready for it.
Right. What can anybody do to help you in this effort? What do you need to get this accomplished sooner than later?
Okay, well, two things. First of all, we have this website, buyingamericaback.org. You know, basically you go to the website and register yourself because eventually we're going to have a bunch of people that, you know, we can, you know, email in various parts of the country when this does start happening with these, you know, congressmen that are, you know, trying to slow this down, you know, and we can activate these people that they hear from you, you know. And then the second thing is that you can start right now buying things differently because, like, for example, this book I have, Buying America Back, the back half of the book is literally all the countries in the world, what the trade ratios are, and there's about 50, 60 pages. It gives you a lot of information about those countries and what they do as far as their environmental policies, human rights, and all that. And start becoming educated because I keep telling you, it's not imported versus not imported. It's where it's imported from. And the thing is that you can't treat them all the same. You know, you don't want to have friendly fire where you hurt your own supporters because a lot of these countries are pro-American. They make an effort. Korea, 79%. They make an effort to buy our stuff. So you don't want to go randomly shooting off at everybody. You want to get the right people, and that's where this information I'm trying to get out is. And by the way, to that book, I tell a side story. Some of this information has never been printed anywhere or even collected. And so I had to go to all these sources, beside embassies and this and that, because I don't know why anyone didn't do this before, but I had to go to the CIA. By the way, you call the CIA, they don't answer. You leave a message and tell them what you want, and they call you back. It's kind of funny. And, you know, then they're very helpful because they have a desk for every country. And so they had a lot of this information. Well, this is what the size of their economy is. This is who they buy from and sell to and all that. And then this is person at the Department of Commerce or Department of State should have that piece of information. And I started collecting some of this stuff, and then no one's ever even looked at before. And it was kind of funny that, you know, this is kind of a obvious thing that should have been done years ago. I don't know why. But, you know, all the information's there, and you know, I'm sure this will be the first of many sources that come up where you can get this information, but you now can know all this stuff you didn't know before, and it really changes, you know, how you think about things. And so right now, buy a Korean television instead of a Chinese television, you know, buy a Taiwanese, and you can go through the different countries and you can see what the ratios are and, you know, which one's better. And you can start doing that now without the detailed list, you know, of, you know, what percentage came from somewhere. And so that's your question on the cause. You can start not buying differently today, you know, and also whatever help we need from the general public to make sure that this thing rolls through the Congress.
Well, the information is here in the book, and I flipped it open, and I went to the country of Finland because I am of Finnish ancestry, and I found it interesting that there's a $1.7 billion deficit with Finland. We export $2.2 billion and we import $3.9 billion. And I'm looking at the products, and of course, Nokia phones and the dishware, Arabia dishware, Itala glasses, kitchenware, and Finn crisps and Wasa bread, and so on. And I'm looking at Fiskars, which are phenomenal scissors, by the way.
Right, they are wonderful scissors. I have them.
and it's absolutely amazing information, and you have it broken down in here. And I'm not telling you; I'm telling the audience how important is American consumerism to this country, products from the country. Did you know about the country? An example here, a quarter of Finland's territory lies north of the Arctic Circle. Some interesting facts. Whether or not there's any human rights or human rights violations that are recorded. What the environment is. We know it's cold and dark. And some tourism information. And it gives you a really nice rundown on the country and everything else that's involved, and you got a nice thumbnail sketch of what goes on in that country.
By the way, another effect of this will be that once Americans start looking at these ratios, you're going to see these countries like Finland, for example, that they see the ratios, you know, about 58%, if I remember, that they are going to try to make an effort to buy American stuff because they don't want it stuck with a low ratio because America is such a big consumer. And so what I'm hoping this will do is it'll affect some of those numbers, and that will affect our exports because they're going to want to, again, court American consumers, but they're going to make a little effort to get their number up. And that helps too. I mean, the point is, and it helps our exports. And so, and all we're doing is not twisting anyone's arm. You know, we're just telling them we're looking.
shed a little light on the subject.
Right.
Yeah.
And by the way, my daughter married a Finn. and he's a very nice young man, very well educated. You know, they spent a lot of effort on schooling and all that kind of stuff. It's like he knows, I'm afraid, more American history than a lot of Americans do. You know,
Now is he from Finland or
from a little town in Finland, and he was on his roommate in college, was a friend of my daughter's. They met, you know, and he came back on a couple trips, and, you know, I guess how these things happen, and now he lives here and they're married. And so the thing is that, I have a little bit of Finland here. You know, nice people, honest people, you know, I think she did well. And he also did a lot of the work on the book as far as the data, you know, finding out all this information. You know, he's a hardworking, very well-educated young man.
Ask him if he knows if he can give you the literal the American translation of the word sisu, S-I-S-U.
Okay, I will do that. And,
sisu.
Okay.
It's go ahead.
Okay. Well, anyway, I thank you for having me. You know, I know your hour's up.
And, yeah, it is. I was just getting to that.
And is there anything else I can answer, or any other information any of the viewers would like
well,
to know about?
Let's just go. Give us the website address again, so that people can get there, and any other little pertinent information as far as getting involved and mustering the forces.
Well, if you have the internet, go to www.buyingamericaback.org, and that'll get you to our website. And once you have that, actually, you know, you'll be into the system, and then you can keep your future updates. Especially if you sign petitions or register, or you can then be part of our coalition that we're building. And, as I said, it's going to take all of us caring and acting on this, because this is like the environment. Is how it got better is everyone added up, their individual things they did, and then we ended up cleaning up the country. Like, we all don't throw oil down the sink anymore, or sink a drain, or we all don't throw trash around, this and that. And by the accumulation of all of our individual things, we've changed things, and it's going to be the same thing here. It's going to be the summation of everyone's activity that's actually going to turn the job situation around. And that's, as I said, what people do in other countries. And so we're having to now respond like that.
Well, sometimes we may be a little behind with the actions that are taken in other countries, but it's rapidly getting to be our turn, and we need to have a turn in this process. And I'm assuming the book is also available on Amazon. Is that correct?
Yeah, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Yeah. And other places. So.
Well,
thank
Alan,
you again.
Thank you very much for being a guest on the show. I'm glad we got you in, and good luck in the book, and good luck in your endeavors. And I'll have to register myself on your site there.
Okay. Well, thank you again, and I'm glad they're not the only one over 50.
Well,
I have one little thing to tell you before I hang up. I think you guys are in Arizona or something like that, so you might appreciate
correct.
This. I'm old enough that I was in the gun club in high school, and I used to bring my guns to school.
Oh, wow. Doesn't happen anymore.
No. It's a different world.
Yes, it is. Yes. Well, in Arizona, you can almost bring your guns to school. They're trying to make it legal to bring them onto a campus.
Yeah, it's a different world. But anyway, maybe we can get back, or partly back.
Sounds great. All right, thanks again, Alan. Good luck to all you do, and I hope this thing gets pushed, like I said earlier, sooner than later, because it's going to be beneficial to all of us. So thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
This has been the Boomer and the Babe Show. That we're having excellent conversations with the world, and today I think we brought you another great conversation with Mr. Alan UK, who is the author of Buying America Back, all about the real deal blueprint for restoring American prosperity. So contact him through his website, buyingamericaback.org, and register for his plan of attack, if you will, because he may need you at some point, and also support him by buying the book. It's available on Barnes & Noble, and I'm sure it's probably also there on buyingamericaback.org that there'll be more information on how to buy it. So thanks again for listening. We've got another show scheduled for you for tomorrow. We're looking forward to that one. Later this week, we're going to be having the Automotive Advice for Women show coming up, and all kinds of other interesting guests that we've got scheduled. Tomorrow we have, tomorrow we have Exploring Faith show, which we'll be doing that with Pastor John Mayer. So stay tuned for that one. Dr. Martin will be talking to us about some other medical issues and so on and so forth. So please be sure to tune in for that. So it's been a pleasure having this time with you today. And go ahead and contact us at boomerthebabe.com with everything else you might want to find out about Boomer the Babe Incorporated. Remember to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And have a great day, everybody, and we will see you again tomorrow. Thank you for listening.
from the Vape Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.